The ends of Sefer Bamidbar, again including Matzot Tmasei, and keeping in mind that obviously the parashiyot are meant to be learned as one unit, as we're going to take a look at and see very, very shortly, but also just a general overview as to how to look at the entire Sefer Bamidbar. Because again, Sefer Bamidbar begins in a very clear way, and even the Ramban points out that the chronology at the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, remember it starts the second year, the second month, and then it goes back to the second year, the first month. Even the Ramban can't deny that that's a case of in muktam u'mulchar b'Torah, but the point is to get a sense of the machaneh, right? That's what happens in the second year, the second month. You have the machaneh of Am Yisrael, a machaneh that surrounds the mikdash that you heard about in Sefer Vayikra, and basically building up through numerous parallels with Sefer Vayikra, all the way to Perek Yud, Vayhi ben Tsoa Aaron, Vayomer Moshe, Kum Hashem. You have basically your ideal, you're 11 days away, you're going to find time in Sefer Devarim, you're 11 days away from entering Eretz Yisrael, and again this is really a build up to imminent entrance of Am Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael. And yet what happens soon thereafter, that's when you begin to hear the stories of number one, Tavera, again the Metzoninim, again the story of Kivrot Tata'ava, subsequently the story of Miriam. So already we're 37 days behind schedule, and then ultimately climaxing within all these stories with the story of the Meraglim and Korach, again, which are not only your paradigms of the stories of Sefer Bamidbar as challenges against leadership, but obviously set Am Yisrael back an additional 38 years. Now, what's very significant is that if you look at these parashiyot, you notice that, okay, there are 10 prakim at the beginning that seem to portray a certain ideal, that machane in its pristine state, and then you have then 8 stories, if you count them, there are really only 8 stories of Am Yisrael in the Midbar. They seem like much longer, the Kriyat Shlach and Korach and Kitat. But it's really only 8 stories, Sachakol, which you know is obviously just a sampling of the various events that took place in the Midbar, which means that when you look at those stories, you're supposed to be able to appreciate the themes, the messages. And even if you look at those 8 stories, there's a parallel between the stories. Complaint for water, complaint for food, complaints against leadership. Again, the story of the Nechashim, which is like the Medoninim, they're fetching just because, again, for the sake of kvetching. And now we're at the very end. We're at the end where we saw already in Parshat Chukat that we have a new camp, that we have a people who are excited to go in. They're taking initiative. They're accepting the Dharma upon themselves. Again, Parshat Chukat that basically spoke about the contrast between Moshe who sends Malachim, again, and is unsuccessful, and Am Yisrael who will initiate and send Malachim and who are successful. You have the waning of leadership at the end of Parshat Chukat, and Balak, which is there to show you that these ideas, again, that the end of Chukat ended with anti-Nechashim, again, continues on a universal level as well for them to recognize the different influences that they're going to be exposed to when they get to Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, when I get to Parshat Pinchas, I'm really not surprised when I see that, okay, now we're back on track. We finally have a new generation, a generation that's excited to enter Eretz Yisrael, a generation that we're going to see right now, and is basically going to set in motion everything that was set in motion at the beginning of Bamidbar. And therefore, what I'd like you to do is, when you take a look at these last few parshiyot of Sefer Bamidbar, to realize that you're concluding the Sefer in the way the Chazal beautifully explained, incorporating, we'll call it the modern literary tool of inclusio, again, or what Chazal nickname as Achatima Me'ein Pticha, that we're entering Bamidbar really more or less with the same way that Sefer Bamidbar began, with the census, again, with Karbanot again. But what I'd like to do is to analyze this a little bit more as we take a look not only at the overall themes, but really at the structure and to how it's portrayed starting from Parsha Pinchas. So let's take a look. We know how, again, the story ended last week, the notorious story of Baal Peor. Now, when I look at Baal Peor, at first glance, from a very elementary perspective, one can argue, you see, they're sinning again. We're back to the same Dor HaMidbar. But I'd like you to look carefully. Yeah, now, when you look at Baal Peor, and you see the various, certainly, literary parallels, but obviously the basic theme of the sin, what type of sin is it? Is it an anti-leadership sin? No, what's a sin?
Religious.
It's a religious sin. It's Avodah Zarah going on. When was the last time you had an Avodah Zarah sin? Was that in Sefer Bamidbar? No. Again, that's all the way back in Shemot. So we're back to, again, believe it or not, Sefer Shemot, which, yeah, is going to kind of offset, again, the preparations of Am Yisrael for now. But at least I have to realize that, okay, I'm not going back to my Bamidbar themes. Right? This is still, we'll call it, post the Bamidbar Tlunot. Again, these are new issues or old issues going on, but I finished Sefer Bamidbar in terms of the problems of Sefer Bamidbar for all intents and purposes. Now, we're going to see that after killing out Zimri and Kazvi, The consequence is not only that Pinchas is going to get the Brit of Shalom, which obviously, again, many people focus on his personality, the kana'ut, the zealous nature there, again, his anti-Avodah Zarah, the reestablishment, really, of leadership again. Again, now we have Yeshua, charismatic Kalev, charismatic Pinchas, again, very much to offset the passivity that we've already seen, not only of Moshe and Aaron throughout Sefer Bamidbar, but even in the story, what's Moshe's response to all of this? This is very interesting. If you turn back, excuse me, to Parak Chafei, Pasuk Dalet, look for a moment. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, kachet kol rashei ha'am, vokau tam la'Hashem neged ha'shemesh, ve'ashov charon ach Hashem Yisrael. Hashem says, okay, this is Chet Ha'egel all over again. What did you do by Chet Ha'egel? You, Moshe, on your own, you realized that you had to kill all those who were actually worshipping Avodah Zarah, remember the 300 of them, and get rid of them. Right? Notice that Hashem says, okay, Moshe, I'm very angry, but it's not like an anti-you issue anymore. So this is a very easy solution. You go take the Rashi Ha'am and stab them, basically, in front of God, and then Hashem will be fine. V'ayim Moshe el Shoftei Yisrael. What happens? Obviously, Moshe, again, himself doesn't do this. Rather, he calls Shoftei Yisrael, and he says, Hirgu Isha Nashav. Again, very similar to the idea back in Sefer Shemot. Who did he gather to do the dirty work? Shevet Levi. Now he takes the Shoftim of Yisrael, again the representatives, and he says, Hirgu Isha Nashav, and it's Madim Laval Pa'or. Again, notice that Hashem perhaps wanted, I don't know, one last expression of Moshe's initiative over here. Now, Moshe, let them see you doing this. Moshe here is going to ask the Shoftei Yisrael to do this, which, by the way, again, in terms of Levi versus Shoftei Yisrael, certainly one can see this as an improvement. At least these are representatives of all of Am Yisrael and not just one tribe turning against other tribes. Which means that in the meantime, there's a leader who is going to openly, in a super overt manner, he's going to have relations in front of Baal Peor, which tells you, are Shoftei Yisrael doing their job? No, please keep that in mind. It's not only Moshe, not Shoftei Yisrael. Ironically, who in the end is going to do the job? A Levi, right? It's not even a Kohen. Right? A Levi is going to do the job that really the Levium did way back by Chet Ha'egel. So now, in conjunction to that, we have the reward of Pinchas. But that's not enough. Look now at Parachafei Pasuk Tetzayin. This is really where the parsha begins. But now you also have to seek vengeance against the Midianim, who were the ones to set you up and allure you into the trap of Avodah Zarah. Okay, time to kill them all out. So what would I expect now? What should happen? So after this terrible magifa that we know killed 24,000, right, which, by the way, interestingly, do you know another historical magifa that killed 24,000 people?
Rabbi Akiva students.
And you know the Chazal are very particular in choosing numbers. Do you think it was exactly 24,000? And hard to imagine that they really kept such a significant count. Again, rather, when they say 12,000 zugot, so that you figure out, obviously, 24,000. By the way, why do they talk there? Why do Chazal call 12,000 zugot? Just say 24,000. Right, what's the whole point over there? Shalom, Abu, Kavod, Zebazeh. Right, they were zugot, they were chavrutot, and yet they didn't even treat each other with proper respect. But why 24,000? Again, do they know about this magifa? Yes, but ultimately a magifa also, Ben Adam, that here it was Ben Adam Chavero, but at the same time, Ben Adam Lamakom, again, clearly an association that Chazal are making with this magifa. So after that magifa of 24,000 killed, Hashem says, okay, now I want you to fight against the Midianim. Notice the phenomenon that we have here, that we already mentioned also in Sefer Shoftim, that I told you appears also in Vayishlach, that appears throughout Nebuah, Vayiacharei HaMagifa. Again, notice you have a continuation, the next pasuk, and after the magifa, and what are you expecting to hear?
War.
Very nice. Hashem said go out to war. So now, they should go out to war. But look at the phenomenon that you have, a very interesting one. Which means that we're in the middle of a pasuk. The pasuk hasn't ended. So I'm waiting for the end of the pasuk. Not only do I not find the end of the pasuk, but I find instead a parshiyah ptucha. Again, I have an open space, an open paragraph. Right? Basically, you're literature teacher would write over here, minus 15 points for fragment, right? Or Again, unended idea. Again, shame on you. Again, what's going on? So it's the Torah. So instead of saying shame on you, we say darshini. What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu have in mind over here? So let's continue for a moment and see. So again, you know that you're going to continue reading the pasuk. Right, that's how the Baal Kriya is going to read it. Strangely enough, though, as he reads it, it doesn't complete the idea. Do you see that? You see how it's not a completed idea yet? Because there still is an open end. Okay, what did Hashem say? Which means that the Torah definitely has in mind for you to continue going and seeing, okay, we just left. Again, or, sorry, I don't know why I use the royal we in Torah. And Hashem just wrote this or dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu in an unending way to keep that thought in your mind. And now it's almost as if there's a commercial break for now. And let's continue. Where is the break going to come to a close? Just keep turning. And or looking at your Mar Makomot. And sure enough, when do you find this? Keep going. And until you get to Parshat Matzot, again, Parak Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, Ayi Devar Hashem Moshe Lemor, Nekom Nekmat Nei Yisrael, Itam Adyanim, Achar Ki Aseif El Amecha. Does that sound familiar? Okay, now it's really time to fight. Right, last time I told you fight, and again, fragment there, suspended. Again, we're going to hold that idea in abeyance, and now you're really going to do it. Ayi Devar Moshe La'am Lemor, Hechel Tzum Yitzcham Anashim La'tzava. So obviously, question number one that you all saw was indeed what ensued after the plague. So what actually happened? And just as Rafi said, I'm assuming if HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, go ahead and fight, that what did they do thereafter? They fought, that there was a war. Did they probably fight afterwards? Yes. And yet when the Torah is going to retell the story, strangely enough, we're going to find this commercial break. Again, we're expecting to hear about the war, and yet then we find that, no, again, almost if the Torah says time out, I can't really tell you about the war yet. Again, it's not executed right away. Rather, again, let's tell you about a few other ideas. And now let's take a look and see the different ideas. First, let's begin with Paskuni. So, again, all the Pashanim are bothered by this. Why do we have an Atznachta? Why don't we have the Sof Pasuk? Again, where's the war? Why do we have to wait 6 prakim until we get to the war? So let's look by Yacharei HaMagifah, Shekalu Metzei Midbar, Yesh Kan Parsha. Again, oh my gosh, this is so weird. Again, after the Magifah, Yacharei HaMagifah, we have a Parshia Ptucha, Apapishi, Be'emsa HaPasuk. You all saw this, right? Again, look, it's an Atznachta. Ayidei Shekhan Yitzhakad Zeirat Metzei Midbar, Umikan Ve'elach, Valim No Tabanim Miben Esrim Shana V'mala Shenichnusu La'aretz. Very interesting explanation. What's the Chizkuni's basis over here? What does he say? And why is there Vahi Acharei HaMagifah? He wants to make it clear that really, again, it ends with, go ahead and fight against the Midianim, who basically were responsible for your Magifah. And really, Vahi Acharei HaMagifah is really just, again, a little bit of an introduction to what you're going to find in the next parshia. What's in the next parshia? Vayomer Hashem el Moshe ve'el Elazar, Su et Rosh kol hatzav b'nei Yisrael. A census, meaning the point of this open-ended idea is to tell you that you had a certain number of Am Yisrael pre-Magifa and post-Magifa. So the Chizkuni says the reason it's open-ended is for you to better appreciate what's going to come in juxtaposition, namely the census, and for you to understand that they had to wait till the Magifa was over to get a sense of how many people are left in Am Yisrael because a significant number died. Everyone see that? Can anyone argue against the Chizkuni for a moment? Again, that's a very nice explanation. He says, in order to show you the difference between pre-Magifa and post-Magifa. Okay? Make sense? Yeah? But still, Margula, think a little. What still bothers you here?
What still has that? Why does Hashem still put that thing there?
Which thing? Very nice. It doesn't answer which component.
An
answer is...
Talk about the war.
Thank you. So why even tell us about the war now? Beautiful. What's your name? Benjamin, thank you very much. I didn't know that that's a problem over here. That it does explain, Vahi Acharei HaMagifah leaves it open-ended to tell you there was a pre-Magifah and post-Magifah, but that doesn't explain why they don't go out to war now. It doesn't explain why Hashem said, Tzror et HaMidyanim, if they're not going to go out to war until Perek Lamed Aleph. Did everyone see that? So it's a partial explanation, but not a full exegetical explanation. Let's go to the Or HaChaim. By the way, some of you are thinking, the Or HaChaim. And yes, the Or HaChaim. Why? Firstly, because, I don't know if you know this, that his yard site was also on Shavuos Arba Tammuz, so definitely, or Tetzai, sorry, was Er Shavuos Arba Tammuz. So let's give the Or HaChaim a little credit. And also, why is the Or HaChaim great? Even though generally we put him in the same category as, let's say, the Kli Yakar and the Datz Kenim Mibali, Atosfon, and the Baal HaTurim. And here I just find that certainly in a parsha and a parshanut shir that I have to mention this, that we become so used to, and to a certain degree, and to crying the parshanim that ended up being placed in the mikra'ok dolot, right? Because we say, in addition to numerous parshanei hapshat, again, somehow a lot of non-parshanei hapshat ended up there, like the Orach Chaim in the Kli Yakar v'chulei. And we know, how did the Kli Yakar end up in the mikra'ok dolot of 1523? Yeah, that's how. Again, he was very, very wealthy, and basically, he paid to have his perush put in. Yes, but, again, does that take away, does that detract from the beauty of his perush?
Nope.
No, thank you. Thank you so much. Brand wine, excellent. Again, it doesn't. It just, again, when you teach us, should recognize that, okay, you know, it's hard to put, at times the Kli Yakar, you know, on the same level as, let's say, Rashi. This is an example, and to explain, again, that this is more of a midrashic approach. And so what happens is that when people laud and should laud, again, the usage of the Torah Chaim, right, which you will probably learn Chumash from, again, by Musar Rav Kook, what was the method of selection of Parshanim to include and to print there? Parshanei Hapshat, right? They had an agenda. So who they put in?
Rashi, Ramban,
Ibn Ezra, Haruch HaNakatzar, Rashbam, Rasab, Radak. Again, even those that haven't been placed in the classic Mikra Oktolot printing.
Yeah,
and again, the more midrashically oriented were left out. So, the Orach Chaim was left out, yeah, because he's more midrashic. But I would like you to keep in mind that although he is later, and yes, although his parshanut does tend to be a little bit, again, more midrashic, he serves as a wonderful, I'm going to say this, as a wonderful commentator, not only in the sense of adding different dimensions that we generally don't see, but also in serving to collect, right, to really, I would say, even codify altogether some of the other parshanim. So that you're able, I call them to a certain degree the shortcut, right? You're able to compare and contrast the different parshanim through the work of the Orach Chaim. So let's take a look, though, at his approach over here, which I find very interesting. It says, Ve'yacharei magifa. So I'm going to ask what everyone else asked. Why do we have an open-ended parshia here? So He says, again, because we're still in the Magifa section, right? Again, the whole Pinchas, again, who stops the Magifa? We're dealing with the Magifa, and people are still dying. So, again, the Torah wants to make it very clear that part of the Tikkun for the Magifa isn't just what Pinchas did, but what's going to be the Tikkun for the Magifa? Tzroret HaMidyanim. So, just mentioning these ideas together. L'marki me'achar, acharei HaMagifa, mekushar marshal l'mala mimenu. And really, what does he do? As opposed to the Chizkuni, who connects it to the next Parshia. And what does the Orach Chaim say? He says, okay, the most basic explanation is, V'yacharei HaMagifa. We're still in the Magifa section. Okay, but what doesn't that explain? So if you're still in the Magifa section and you're explaining, again, ways to fix the Magifa, then what should happen? And again, go out to war. So it's very nice that that's why he's explaining why Yacharei HaMagifa is put in with the Tzroret HaMidyanim, is put in with a prior section, with the Baal Peor section, and it's not in the census section. But it still doesn't explain why they don't go out to war afterwards. Let's continue. The Tam Shalo Aso, Pasuk with Nats. He says, really, it should exist on its own. Itkaven gam kein lekashro lamata. He says, the advantage of putting it right in between is an open-ended atznachta. It's also for you to recognize that it can potentially be connected to the next parshia as well. Shachar ha-magifa, amar Hashem, v'gomer su'u et rosh kol adab in Yisrael, nimsei tomer, ki me'amar v'hi acharei ha-magifa, mashma l'mala, lagid in yan echad. So I learned that the idea of the magifa is connected to Tzroret HaMidyanim, is connected to Baal Pa'or, v'lamata lagid in yan echad. And it's also connected to the next idea, which one can argue is the Chuskuni's idea, to tell you that there's a new number after the magifa. And he says, and I'm going to give you another explanation. Again, he's quoting Chazal here in the Midrash Rabbah. When they left Mitzrayim, there was a census, the beginning of Bamidbar. Kshek Rav Lamut Hechsi Ramdan Minyan. And therefore, when Moshe is about to die, when his job started, it started with counting Am Yisrael, and when it ends with counting Am Yisrael. Ad kan. V'hu ma shenitkavim v'tchilat ha-parsha v'yemar shomo Moshe lomar. Ki b'lo tam acharei ha-magifa yesh tam b'minyan zeh. Kedei lachziram b'minyan k'humor. What is the point of Or HaChaim? A very interesting structural point. He's saying that until now, we're still in the life of Moshe. We're still in, again, Baal Pa'or basically takes you through, again, the life of Moshe Rabbeinu and through the stories of the Midbar. And what comes next? Suat Rosh Kol Adap in Israel. We're basically preparing to enter Eretz Yisrael. He says, what does Vahiya Chareha Magifa do? It basically connects, again, both of the stories, specifically the ends of Moshe's life with Suat Rosh Kol Adap in Israel. Why? And we'll see what the basis for Chazal to say this in just a minute is. To show you that, again, a very nice structure, not just for the stories of the Midbar, but for the life of Moshe Rabbeinu. The life of Moshe Rabbeinu started with the census, and it ends with the census. So now that we're ending the life of Moshe Rabbeinu, where did Chazal get the idea that we're ending the life of Moshe Rabbeinu? Take a look at Perek Lamed Aleph. What does it say? Nikom, Nikmat. Again, go ahead now and avenge the Midianim, right, for what they did, vengeance against them. V'achar te'aseif elamecha. So in the end, again, this melchama against Midian is going to be the last of the tasks of Moshe Rabbeinu. So how do we want to end the life of Moshe Rabbeinu? With this last task together with a census. Isn't that a nice idea? Very nice idea. Still doesn't solve the problem. What problem?
Why doesn't the war happen?
So just tell you the war. If the whole point is, end it with this last task and a census. So tell you about the war now also. Right, at least it does explain a little bit of, again, the juxtaposition, again, with the census, but I still don't have the word. Just put it all together and get it over with already. Right, so here you should know, the Chazal and that same Midrash say what was going on. Yes, this is going to be the last of the activities in which Moshe Rabbeinu is going to be involved, this war. So why doesn't it tell you it right away? Because it wants to, even psychologically, of course the war happened now, and the census happened now, but to psychologically, again, push off and delay as much as possible the death of Moshe Rabbeinu, right, which we're definitely not looking forward to, so we're just going to keep pushing it off. So that's a very cute, beautiful, psychological explanation. Right, everyone see that? But does that still explain the chronology over here? No. Right, so let's try to look a little deeper, and that's what we're going to try to do together now.
So according to that, here's what's the purpose of Vayehi Acharei HaMagifa?
Very nice, right over there, to show you Vayehi Acharei HaMagifa. And that really, the Magifa and the Tzoret HaMidyanim, again, this is the last of the stories of the Midbar. Vayehi Acharei HaMagifa, linking it to the census, links Moshe to the census. Mm-hmm. Right? Links the last of those activities to the census, which is a very nice idea. What we're going to do instead is to try to figure out, you know, until now we've been working on the bookends. Right? Let's see, why are the bookends divided? Put them together. Maybe the commercial break, maybe the interruption or the content of the interruption will give us some leeway into understanding this parshia division. So let's take a look and we're going to see what we find here. And again, Perek Lamed Aleph is the end of the bookend, is where they're actually going to fight. So we're returning to the interruption itself. Number one, right? Perek Chafav, the census. And now look carefully at the census. And indeed, I ask you, does it remind you of another census? Again, you can be a very amateur structuralist, and you will definitely see that. What is this bringing you back to? The beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, no question. So I say, look, again, now we're really ending the same way we began. This is so nice, so structured. We're entering Eretz Yisrael. Let's ignore the problem of our parshia in abeyance over there, Vayacharei HaMagifa, for a minute. And now, okay, I know that I'm really going back to the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, ready to have Am Yisrael enter Eretz Yisrael. But as soon as you compare it to the beginning of Bamidbar, you're obviously, anytime you find a parallel, even if you want to show that it's a beautiful inclusio, that it's a very nice structural ending, you're meant to compare and contrast. Are there any differences between the way that the census is described in Perek Chafav versus the way that it was imparted to us, at least, from Perek Aleph through Perek Talit at the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar? Very nice. Beautiful. Very nice. Meaning, the entire census at the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar was based on Shvatim. It was all tribal. And you'd expect it to be that way, because what was the point of the census there?
To create traveling. The
encampment and the traveling, right? Which was all tribal. If I'm on. Even, again, but it was also mentioned, if you look in Perek Dalet, it was for camping, it was for tribal purposes, and also le Tzivotam, right? It was also for military purposes. This one, again, they already have a camp, is just going to be L'Tzivotam, and yet I'm still bothered, right? So let it be like the encampment. Let it be just tribal. Again, like it was in the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. What do you find very early on in the census? What type of census is this?
Mishpacha.
Very nice. B'nei Ruvain, Chanoch, Mishpachat HaChanuchi, Lefalu, Mishpachat HaPalui. Again, this is all Beit Av, Mishpachot. These are clans. These aren't tribes. Again, yes, in the end, the clans are going to compose the tribes. But, again, this should bother you a little. Right? Everyone notice this? Again, why are we so, or why is the Torah, again, so set on, again, counting each and every clan? This is Mishpachat HaChanuchi. This is Mishpachat HaKami. Right? And in the end, even when it tells you in Pasuk Nun Talid, LaRav Tarben Nachalato V'la Ma'atam It Nachalato Ish Lefik Pekudav Yutan Nachalato, we find, because what is the other reason? It's Lefi Nachala. But even Nachala, again, we're given based on tribes. And so why do we have, again, every family, every single family is going to be counted over here. Okay, let's continue the way, and you see this throughout. Again, the entire census. And now we continue again to Parachav Zayim. So the next interruption, right? The story of Benot Slovchad. Indeed. Then when Benot Slovchad are introduced, how are they introduced to you? Firstly, we have each one of their names, which is very awkward, not only, again, for women to have their names mentioned, each one, again, but also within the context of Sefer Bamidbar. And you really don't have, again, the individuals of a family mentioned. Here, every single daughter is mentioned. Noach, Hagba, Milka, Tirta, about Machla, right? Anna, Vatekravna, Benot Slovchad. How are they even described? Ben Chifer, Ben Gilad, Ben Machir, Ben Menashe, Lemishpachot Menashe, Ben Yosef. It really could have just said that they are from the Shevet of Menashe and portray them as Benot Slovchad, because all they're really going to say is, Lama Nigra Avinu. Their argument is about their father. So why do I have to mention their father and the grandfather and the great-grandfather? If in any case, we're going to find out that it's a Shevet Menashe Nachala issue. And not only that, even when Menashe is described, how is Menashe described? You don't have this in Sefer Bamidbar. Menashe ben Yosef. We haven't done that in a while. Like, gone all the way back to Shiftei Yisrael as B'nai Yosef. Again, the entire original tribal clan of Shiftei Yisrael of B'nai Yaakov. Sorry? In the very beginning, to almost tell you that, okay, like we're leaving the generation now where I'm B'nai Yisrael, and the second most, I would say the most detailed, detailed sub mentioning that you're going to get is all tribes, right? Shevet this, Shevet that. Now all of a sudden, I get to each and every individual name, each and every family. And by the way, what is their argument?
That their father shouldn't lose out on this.
Very nice. And what do we want? We want an achuzat nachala betoch achi avihen. Right? As one of the other brothers of our father. Meaning we want to be part of this family. And notice the emphasis on the mishpacha. Look at Pasuk Yud Aleph. Inachim laviv unetatim. Natatem etz nachalato l'sheiro hakarov v'alav mi mishpachto. Here you find the laws, as you know, of nachalot. Right, that if there aren't any brothers, then you go to Mimishpachto. Right, most of Yevamot is going to be based on this also. Mimishpachto v'yerashulta v'yital v'nei Yisrael l'chukat mishpat kasher t'vashem et Moshe. It's all about the mishpacha. That, again, if they don't get a nachala, will their tribe still get the same amount of nachala? Yes, definitely. Okay, and we'll just, the tribe of Tzlovchad, basically, the family of Tzlovchad's Nachala, will be redistributed amongst the tribe. And that's what we're concerned with, again, from the very beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, was about the tribes entering Eretz Yisrael. What did they say? No, again, Lami Garashim Avinu. We want a name to our particular family. We want Tzlovchad Nachala. Right? And I would argue that maybe if this was placed somewhere else, maybe it wouldn't have the same significance. Right? We're going to see that it's very significant that it's here, and we'll just prove it because where else is it mentioned? It's mentioned at the very end of Sefer Bamidbar as well. And wherein we find, again, if you turn to the very end of Maaseh, there, if you remember, who's going to come up? Shevet Menashe is going to say, wait a second, if they get their own nachala for their own insular family, for their own mishpacha, then what are we afraid of? They may marry out of the family, in which case some of the tribe and the tribal nachala will no longer be preserved. They have a very good Again, good argument. Which means that in the end, and the Torah is also going to have to deal with the tribal issue. This is so weird. I have two Anot Lovchot stories, one here in Parachav Zayin, the other at the very end of Sefer Bamidbar. Why not just juxtapose them together? Or make it a family issue and a tribal issue all in one? Nope, the Torah separates them. Now we're focusing on the family perspective, on the family issues. And later on, then the Torah is going to tell you about the tribal issues. Are you a little confused? You should be. Again, this should bother you very much. How many of you have gone through the end of Sefer Bamidbar and say, this is so weird. I don't know what this is doing here, number one. Secondly, I don't know why we have still a parsha in suspension. Thirdly, there seem to be redundant parshiot. We have an Otz Lavchad and we have an Otz Lavchad. Just put them all together. Again, what are they doing in separate parts at the end of Sefer Bamidbar? Let's continue. We're forced to ask more questions and then we'll get back to this. Next. Again, that was basically Parachav Zayin. Then it gets really, really weird. Again, what happens after Parachav Zayin? You have, again, Parachav Chet. What's Parachav Chet and Chav Chet? The Musafim. Right? What are the Musafim doing here? This is also really, really strange. Right? Again, to put the Musafim right here. So again, in the broader issue of the Inter Sefer Bamidbar, I understand. Of course the Musafim are here because this is another, just like the census for the Tzava and the Nachala, and just like a Benot Slavcha Nachala story, again, I have other Eretz Yisrael stories and issues going on. The Musafim and the Nesachim are only going to be relevant when and where? In Eretz Yisrael. So call these pre-Eretz Yisrael sugyot. Are they? Yes. But they're existing in their own framework of Vahi Acharei HaMagifa and the actual execution of the mitzvah of war. Right, you see that? So again, why are there Musafim over here? Let's continue. Just to make matters a little worse, look at Perek Lamed. Vayemar Moshe b'nei Yisrael k'chol shir tzivah Hashem et Moshe, vayedibar Moshe roshei hamatot l'bnei Yisrael l'emor zeh hadavar asher tzivah Hashem. Okay, now we're in roshei matot. And then now we have to talk about two, specifically the tribal leaders, and tell them about the laws of Nidarim. This is so weird. Is this an Eretz Yisrael sugya, Nidarim? Now, so Rav Liebtag likes to explain, what is this doing here? Again, you have to re-bring, again, the tribal leaders, and you have to remember that tribal leaders are the ones who are most prone to making promises on their campaigns, and therefore they're the most prone to breaking their promises on their campaigns. That's very nice, but at the same time, it doesn't explain why this is part of a pre-Artistral studio, really, and certainly it doesn't explain what it's doing, again, right here in the middle of my Milchamet Midian stories. So, let's take a look, and we're going to pay attention to the words that you find within the story. Is it really just about Nidarim? Now, the truth is, what sugya already introduced me to Nidarim a little. Where did I really, and by the way, most of Nidarim, again, the actual making a Nidar, I learned from this. Where do I learn it from? Nazir. Very nice. Again, Nidarim is by Ish Kiyafli, Isho Isha Kiyafli, Lendor Nidar, Lazir Lahashem. Again, so really, if the Torah wants to teach me about Nidarim, it should just have elaborated. Again, in the Nidarim section, beautifully said, in the Nazir section. Well, this parshiyah is not really about Nidarim. What is it about? Okay, now we know that you guys didn't prepare, but that's fine, again, because I know you're all learning. That's okay. What is it about?
Vows.
Thank you. Meaning, not just vows, but about what aspect of vows?
About making a vow. All of the vows are heard by
and then, doing what with the vow? Annulling the vows. Meaning, this isn't a vow session. This is an annulment of vows section that I find over here. Right? Yes, it is. And it's all about annulling the vows. So let's take a look and see, Anna, how the Torah is going to introduce, again, what we generally call hafarat nedarim. Let's take a look. By El Rashi Hamatzot, Ish Ki Yidor Neder Lashem, Oy Shavah Shvu'ah, Lesor Yisar Nafsho, Lo Yechal Dvar, Kochal Yotzei Mipiv Yaseh. That was basically the same pasuk as Nizirut. Right, okay, you make a vow. Very nice. V'Isha Ki Yidor Neder Lashem, Vasra Yisar, V'Vit Avi Abinu Ra. Again, I know that also from Ish O'Isha, Ki Yafli Lindor Neder Lazir Lashem. What's the Chiddush? The Chiddush is going to be in the next few pasukim. V'Shama Aviha Et Nidra. And if she's still in her father's house and her father heard her neder, again, what can he do? He can be mefir that neder. He can cancel the neder. And v'im heini aviyota b'yom shamo kol neder v'asar asher asron asher lo yakum v'ashem yisach la kini aviyota. Again, and if she never fulfilled them, that's okay, because her father already annulled them for her. V'mayoti yeliish. But if she's married, and she makes a vow, v'shama isha b'yom shamo, v'charish la v'kamun nizareh v'asara sh'arthron afshal lo yakamu. V'v'yom shamo isha yaniota. If he heard and he didn't say anything, then she still has to keep them. If he heard and he annulled them, then she doesn't have to keep them. V'im v'itisha nitzara osara yitzara nafsha b'shuva v'shama isha v'charishla and or hefer yefer otam isha b'yom shamo. And everyone see, this is the system of annulling. Pasuk yudale kol neder v'chol shvuat yisar lanot nefesh isha yikimenu v'isha yifirena v'macharesha charishla. But just to remind you, if he doesn't say anything, then she has to keep all those vows b'yom shamo v'mafer yefer otam macharesha shamo v'nasa atavuna g'ilach hukim asher tiva shemon moshe ben ish lishto ben avle vito ben ureha b'taviha. Interestingly, to teach us the laws of hafarat nidarim, what are the situations that are given? Familial, right? We're all familiar. Our father hears his daughter, or our husband hears his wife, and then how he responds. Right? Again, all familially oriented. But this, let's just go back. That was Perek Lamed. Lo and behold, what do we finally hear in Perek Lamed Aleph? We're back to our regularly scheduled program. Right? After all of those very weird commercial breaks, again, which reminds me to a certain degree, like the Super Bowl, you know, again, how much money each one spends in order to get like a Super Bowl commercial. And at least there's a common theme between the commercials. What's the common theme? They're all somehow related to football. Right? They're all related. And now back to your regularly scheduled program. Again, but the Torah, generally we're not used to commercials, right? The Torah is going to tell you at least some type of flowing course of themes, of ideas. But at least I'd expect that if there are commercial breaks, that there should be some type of flowing theme over here. So now I'm back to the regularly scheduled program, and I want to understand what was the point of all those Eretz Yisrael-oriented type of stories, or some of them not even being like Nedarim. Again, Eretz Yisrael-oriented stories. Why were they right in between Chafav and Lamed Aleph? And why then, Vahiyah Charei HaMakifah, written as it is? Let's just prove it just for a minute. Take a look and see what happens immediately after this war. Perek Lamed Bet. We have a pure, again, Eretz Yisrael story. We have Reuven got Chatzi Menashe. Let's even call this not even imminent entrance to the land. This is already Hitz Nachalut, right? This is your beginning to say for Yehoshua. This is your prelude to all the future stories of Eretz Yisrael. These are Eretz Yisrael proper stories, in which case, what should be over here? Benot Zlavchat should be over here. Maybe the census should be over here. So why are even the Eretz Yisrael stories interrupted? I have a Reuven Gad story of Nachala, and then what comes afterwards? Then Maaseh, which basically just closes up the Midbar, introduces that they're on their way to Eretz Yisrael, and as mentioned again, Arei Miklat, now the land is already being divided, and last but not least, what most bothers me really is Perek Lamed Vav, I have Benot Zlavchat again! Again, why are the Benot Zlavchat stories divided? Okay, here we go. Back to Perek Vav, back to the beginning of Parsha Pinchas, and we're going to try to understand this. Anyway. Go for it. Very nice.
I mean, basically, this kind of idea. Yeah, said that that when it did that, like at the end of the last parsha, we had destruction of like our morale of our like family system.
Very nice.
Because these women came in and pretty much destroyed it. So she says that this whole turnaround is all about how like we're coming back to our family system.
100%. Beautiful. That's exactly what we're going to see, right? That's the theme. I'm just going to say, Nechama Leibowitz expresses this, Rav Avia HaKohev has a beautiful article, but I'd like to point out some of the details here, again, as part of it. And why is it portrayed this way? And this is how Nechama Leibowitz begins. Really, what happens immediately after Baal Peor? So Binyamin pointed out that in addition to it being an Avodah Zarah type of issue and bringing us back all the way to Chet HaEgel, Tachlis, what else happens in Baal Peor?
Destroy the family unit.
And there are men going out, and it's true as a form of Avodah Zarah, but they're committing adultery. Again, they're breaking up the fiber of the family, 100%. So, stage one, what has to be dealt with? And let's just go in the right order. First, what has to be dealt with? The perpetrators of the crime have to be gotten rid of. Okay? Pinchas kills Zimri and Cosby. Can we move on? No. Who else has to be dealt with? The people have to know that we are not going to be content. We're going to have to fight against the source of the crime, namely, Tzror et HaMidyanim. Now recognize that this can't happen again. Again, go and fight and kill off those Midyanim. By the way, who has to be killed off? the men and the woman, right? That's what happens after the war. And Moshe gets upset at Elazar again. The whole point was the woman. Kill off the men and the woman against Sroret HaMidyanim. And basically, now we can move on. What does the Torah say? Really, what should happen after the Magefa? So Rafi said. And we should have already right now, again, Paraklamet Aleph, we should have the war. And again, for all intents and chronological purposes, they probably have the war. Yes, but the Torah says time out. And what it does is it suspends the war for you. And it tells you, yes, you're going to have to deal with the war. You're going to have to fight against your enemies. You're going to have to deal with the nemesis. But recognize that right now there's some type of magifa within. There's some type of disease within. That you can't just go out now and fight against those external enemies and those external pressures until you do what? Until you fix what's been broken. What's been broken based on Baal Peor? Your families. So stage one. What is the Torah going to do? Just like the Chizkuni says, we're going to count post-magifa. Ah, but how are we going to count? This time we're going to count how? Not based on tribes. Why not? Again, ultimately, they need the tribes for the Nachala. Again, ultimately, that's exactly what Sheva Menashe is going to argue in Perek Lamed Vav. And so why can't the Torah just count based on tribes? Because you don't have tribes right now. Why don't you have tribes? Because the tribes consist of the Batei Av, consist of the Mishpachot. Again, because you don't have the clans. So stage number one, you're going to have to first get yourself back to families. Again, fix your broken homes. Count every single family member. It goes by family, family. And because only that way will you ever get back to a tribe. So that's number one. Ne'am Mishpachot, census we're going to call it, because that was broken. Okay, stage number two, now you understand. Why is Benot Slavchad placed here? It's not just placed to show you their love of Eretz Yisrael. Again, that could be placed at the end of Sefer Bamidbar. Why is it placed over here? To show you family values. Every single member of the family got up. Again, Batidaberna, they speak to Moshe Rabbeinu. And what are they fighting for? They're fighting for family identity and family preservation, family values. Again, that's Benot Slavchad. Why are they placed here? Because this is where Hashem wants to teach. Yes, this is where you need Benot Slavchad. Again, bring you back to those family values that were destroyed based on Baal Peor. Next, again, this is a little weird. Again, right as you have the transition from Moshe to Yoshua, again, then you're going to find the whole Parshat HaMusafim. What are Parshat Musafim all about? It's a musaf offering as opposed to, again, a regular tamid offering. And every single, if you know this, this is in Shkalim, every single family member has to contribute to the musaf. That instead, again, this is a weird thing, that I already found, again, different shlamim that were mentioned. These are shalmi tzibor. And these are the families contributing to the karbanot. And it's true that they're shayach to Eretz Yisrael. But why are they particularly here? Because these are going to be, again, the masses contributing to what goes on inside the Beit HaMikdash.
Can you just say quickly how they contribute?
How they contribute?
Yeah.
Yes, very nice. Every family, I mean, it goes by the Beit Av, again, contributes a Misachet Shkalim. We're told, how do they actually contribute? They give a Machatit HaShekel for everyone, Ben Esrim Shana B'Mala. Okay, within the family, the first people who contribute the Shkalim, that goes for the Musafim. The next people, which means, again, to buy all the animals for all the additional offerings on all the Chagim throughout the year. Right, the second people, by the way, this is the first parak of Masechet Shkalim. The second people who contribute their machatzit hashekel, what does it go to? It's a general bedek habayit to repair other issues going on in the Beis HaMikdash. The third people, the third group, we'll call them the latecomers, the procrastinators, where does their machatzit hashekel go? To improve the roads and transportation to get to Yerushalayim. Right, so they're all and ideas that ultimately everyone is going to benefit from. I don't know about you, but I would want my shekel to go to what? I think the Karbanot. No, again, just but it's okay. Again, it's very important to also improve the roads and transportation. Very nice. So remember, is when you give your Machatzit HaShekel, Rosh Chodesh Adar. Rosh Chodesh Adar, you give it. Akiva, can you tell me why is Rosh Chodesh Adar the best time to collect the Machatzit HaShekel that I need for Musafim and I need for the Beis HaMikdash and I need for people to get to Yerushalayim for Aliyah LaRegel? When does everyone have to come to Yerushalayim? So Shalosh Regalim, but definitely for Karban Pesach, right? So I need enough time. I keep on saying I or we or it's just the royal terminology over here. But and yes, the Kohanim and the leaders and the carpenters, they need enough time to make sure that sufficient funds have been amassed. and thereby to properly prepare for the beginning of the cycle of the Shalosh Regalim, starting with Pesach. By the way, something very nice in Eretz Yisrael, till today they raised transportation taxes when? This is so cool. Rosh Chodesh Adar. That's when Eged goes up in price. Come on, that's so nice. I mean, not nice, but nice. That, yes, we still have some preservation of transportation taxes. Okay, here we go. Back to, again, the Musaf and them. What comes right afterwards? Then Nidarim. Again, but we understand, and you all saw the Mila Mancha. What's the Mila Mancha in the Hafarat Nidarim situation? Vishama, Vishama, Vishama. What's the basic? Again, and why is this here? This has nothing to do with Eretz Yisrael. This is not a mitzvah tzuya ba'aretz. Hafarat Nidarim is universal. So what is the whole idea here? Fathers, listen to your daughters. It's not about being mefer the neder. If you hurt her and you decide not to do anything, fine. And if you decided to be mefer, fine. It's about, are you going to hear her? Are you going to hear what she has to say? And husbands, listen to your wives. Can anyone tell me, by the way, why do you think it shows? Again, really, why is the Torah using this as... as, again, a father, daughter, and a... and can a father also be made for the neder of his son? That's why I said specifically father, daughter, husband, wife. So it's true that only husband can be made for that of his wife. But why use these cases? I hate to say it, because all too often, fathers don't necessarily listen to their daughters, husbands don't necessarily listen to their wives. And it's important that the Torah stress it and stress it here as, can you just ruin that? Right? I can just imagine these wives during Baal Peor saying, and what do you think you're doing? Going off with that 15-year-old. Again, what are you doing? Again, you're breaking the family fiber. And again, the mothers knew. Can you imagine the scene? I'm sure mothers and daughters, again, calling after their brothers and their husbands and their fathers saying, what? Again, you're destroying our family. And no, I'm worshipping Baal Peor. No, again, you're having relations with... Listen to your daughters. Listen to your wives. Listen to your children. And go eat lunch with them. And on that note, only after that are we ready to go and fight against the external enemies. Only